What happens when we overvalue our accomplishments in wisdom, wealth, or pleasure? When life appears to be meaningless? Hi, this is Darko Stefanovic from Walla Walla College School of Theology. Welcome to Probe, our weekly radio program that focuses on biblical topics and discussions. Today we are continuing a series of topics based on one of the less known books of the Bible, the book of Ecclesiastes. To help us explore this challenging book, I have invited two of my colleagues to join me in the discussion. Dr. Anthony Abbey, Chair of the Computer Science Department at Walla Walla College, and Professor Jean-Paul Grimaud, Chair of Modern Languages Department, also at Walla Walla College. Gentlemen, welcome again, and thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Susan and Scotty are helping us with the technical equipment here, and we appreciate their help as well. So here we come to the opening words of the book of Ecclesiastes. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Can we make sense and find some meaning in a statement that claims that everything is meaningless?
Well, I like the traditional vanity, vanity, all is vanity. But I understand that another way of looking at this is nothing, nothing, everything is nothing. And it's important, I think, to go back to Genesis, where God created the universe out of nothing. Mathematicians create the numbers out of the empty set. We understand recursion, and there I'm beginning to get too technical probably here, mm-hmm. but from an undefined entity. So this seems to be a theme that pervades lots of thinking.
I think the term meaningless does not refer to a sense of nothingness that we know in the philosophy, the French philosophy of existentialism. I think we need to put that into context. When you read, for example, the verses 4 and 5, mm-hmm. generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. I think what we have here, we have two entities. We have the macrocosmos and we have the microcosmos, which is man, human being. So this, whatever this microcosmos man achieves, accomplishes, it's in some way poor compared to the complexity of the earth and the universe. And in that sense, it's meaningless.
That's an interesting insight. And nevertheless, it is a very strong statement. I'm thinking in the original Hebrew, whenever we have X of X, mm-hmm. that's one way to express superlative, mm-hmm. like we have God of gods, the most supreme God, mm-hmm. or Song of Songs, the most excellent song. And however, in this context, it is a powerful statement. The word for nothingness, vanity, mm-hmm. What are the other terms that we have used? Meaningless or meaninglessness mm-hmm. as noun. Mm-hmm. They are all based on the Hebrew original, which is Hevel. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that the name of Abel, a son born to Adam and Eve, mm-hmm. is related to this very word.
Very interesting.
Pointing to the fact that life is transient, that things happen in life, and then tomorrow things can change, and the transitory nature of life. I'm just wondering if we can go down to verses 9 through 11, which open another facet of this statement. And basically, we can summarize this passage by saying there is nothing new under the sun. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is this the thinking of a person who is in a very pessimistic mood?
I don't think so. I think this is a reflection of the time in which the book was written. There was a rhythm to life, a cyclic nature. In fact, as you read several of the verses that precede that section, Solomon, or the teacher, talks about the various natural cycles that occur. But what seems to come through is a frustration that human beings are subject to those same cycles, the birth, the work, and death, and that ongoing cycle. And it seems that he wants, and he alludes this to it in, I don't see now where the text is, but this notion of eternity, permanence. And I think there's a sense that a frustration is being expressed in this chapter, that human beings just don't seem to fit this notion of eternal persistence.
On that same note, it would be very important to mention the fact that in terms of desire, wherever we live or whenever we live, whatever century time it is, the fundamental desire of existence are the same, finally. Mm-hmm. Love, you know, and so on.
Thank you. And as you are saying that, you remind me of some experiences that we have from time to time, like when we would take a group of students from this school to the Middle East or other places for an archaeological dig or other trips. And suddenly, these young people, they realize, hey, I don't really need that many things in life in order to survive. Mm-hmm. And plus, because I'm not surrounded by all the entertainment around me, I notice the human beings around me, and people get very close to one another. Interesting things happen. For several years, I should say, I have been reflecting on the term under the sun. Mm-hmm. And let me read it here, because I have a question about this. And I think that I have an insight, but it has to be confirmed by at least two wise men. So, gentlemen, I will see if you will be ready to do that. Verse 9 says, "What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun." This term "under the sun," could it be that it refers to something, we could express it in a different way and say, as seen by a human eye? That's one realm. Then we move to the realm of faith. When we look at this world through the eyes of faith, then the perspective changes. Am I right on this, or, you know, am I erring here, or?
Well, I mentioned the idea of, the frame of reference earlier, and I said we have, you know, man, the universe, and God. So, yeah, probably you are right by saying that.
it seems reasonable. I mean, it does imply a separation, a distinction between what is under the sun and what is over the sun. Well, what is over the sun? That's the realm of the supernatural, the spiritual.
Yeah. And I also mentioned the idea of the macrocosmos, mm-hmm. and microcosmos.
So is it useful or dangerous, you know, if I say, well, let me take a little time to put my faith aside and to look at the things as they appear mm-hmm. in this life? Is that useful or dangerous? Should we ever do that? I know that when it comes to the life of a believer, there is no vacation or holidays when we can forget our faith and so on. And yet, from time to time, in order to understand what some human beings go through and so on, is it useful to say, let me think now this way, mm-hmm. to see what the world looks like through the eyes?
Well, even in the realm of faith, people have differing perspectives.
Yes.
I was just listening to a newscast the other day where some research was suggesting that people view God in at least four different ways. A judgmental God, a critical God, an authoritative God, a beneficent God. And so we all have these different perspectives in our lives. And I think a realistic perspective, an empirical perspective, is certainly helpful. Mm-hmm. And certainly it's necessary for science and engineering to proceed.
Or maybe I should correct myself and say the divine instead of God. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's more appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see that we have here one more passage from the same chapter, and that is verses 16 through 18, and where it says, "I thought to myself," the teacher said, "Look, I have grown and increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly, but I learned this too, is a chasing after the wind." Are there situations in life when wisdom appears like folly, or wisdom does not appear to make sense, is not very helpful in everyday life? Are there such situations? And what should we do about it?
Well, the more knowledge you have, the more questions you raise. And I don't know if this is good. There is a French poet who said something like that. He said, "The one who doesn't know the sense of his life is a happy man."
Yeah.
He eats, he sleeps, he makes love, and life goes on. I don't know what.
So let's say that poets, they sing about life and life issues, and they are happy people. Are philosophers happy, Anthony?
Well, I like to think so. One of the things that we seem to search for as human beings is a complete understanding. We like to have some security in this ever-changing world. And yet when we probe the limits of knowledge and understanding, we have to confess that our knowledge will always be incomplete and perhaps vague and perhaps even contradictory. And yet, somehow, knowing that, we can find happiness and peace and joy.
That was well said. Thank you. In concluding, we can say that the author of Ecclesiastes teaches that without faith, life may look like being devoid of its true meaning. Even wisdom that is not grounded in faith in God makes no sense. This is the reason why in several places in wisdom passages in the Bible it is written, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning," and the Hebrew word "beginning" means the most important component of wisdom. So the fear of the Lord is the most important component of wisdom. I would like to thank both Dr. Anthony Abbey and Professor Jean-Paul Grimaud for their valuable contributions. Next time, again, they will be my guests. I also appreciate the presence of Suzanne and Scotty, who are our technical assistants here. Please join us next week as we continue to explore the messages from the biblical book of Ecclesiastes. Thank you all for tuning in. For Probe, I'm Zdravko Stefanovic.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194 or email us at probe@wwc.edu. Thanks for listening. We'll be here next week at this time with Probe.